Capital Investment Committee will come to order on this fifth day of March, and we welcome everyone. And the first item on the agenda today is Commissioner France, who's going to go over the governor's budget recommendations to us. And we're coming off a high now. We passed House File 80 yesterday on the floor of the House of Representatives and the Senate, so we can only go up from here.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for giving this opportunity to testify this morning. My name is Myron France, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget, and what I'd like to do is spend the first part of your time this morning going over the overall package the governor's put together in the capital budget. There are a number of other folks in the audience today who will be able to testify about specific aspects of their agency and the bonding bill and their stuff. But what I wanted to really start talking about, as you mentioned, Madam Chair, the action that was taken yesterday and the need for a bonding bill. There have been many times since the governor released his bonding bill or his capital recommendations that I've heard people talk about that this capital budget includes too many projects, or it's too large, or it's too expensive, or we should wait till next year, which is a quote bonding year in 2020. Well, the simple answer to all those questions is these projects really cannot wait. First of all, when you look at deferred maintenance, I want to talk a little bit about the critical needs that we face and the opportunities that we have. If you look at deferred maintenance, the backlog continues to grow. Just between the state enterprise itself and the Minnesota State College and University System and the University of Minnesota, we're maintaining and preserving roughly 85 million square feet of public assets, with deferred maintenance costs totaling something in the neighborhood of $7 billion. If you look at another area in the aging water infrastructure, Minnesota communities have identified $5 billion worth of projects that need to be completed over the next 20 years to replace and rehabilitate wastewater and sewer systems. The only way to take care of that kind of a backlog is to make sure that every year we provide opportunities to reduce that backlog. Third, housing for everyone. According to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, between 2000 and 2017, the median rent in Minnesota increased 13%, while median income of Minnesota renters declined by 1%. The result of this is that housing that is affordable, safe, and comfortable is slipping out of the reach of too many Minnesotans. Fourth, in local transportation infrastructure, communities across the state and in the metro area are struggling to stay connected to critical services like health care, schools, and employment because of local roads and bridges that aren't safe or aren't built to current capacity. When roads are in poor condition, it costs Minnesotans time, money, and peace of mind. And finally, all of us are aware of the safety issues facing Minnesota correctional facilities. Correctional facilities play a key role in ensuring staff and workplaces are safe, but to achieve these outcomes, the Department of Corrections must be able to address the deferred maintenance needs that put safety and operations at risk. Although all of these needs are significant, and to be clear, the list is longer than just these three, Minnesota is in a position of opportunity to address these challenges. Interest rates are relatively low. Minnesota has a AAA bond rating. The governor's biennial budget includes sufficient debt service to cover the cost of this capital investment proposal, and this capital budget recommendation falls well within our debt capacity guidelines, which were established in 2008. Half of this budget is directed toward preserving, maintaining, and renewing the assets we already have. And taking care of what we have is fiscally responsible. Not doing so will cost us money down the line. If we don't replace a leaking roof now, we may have to rehabilitate an entire building later. Oops. If we can make this work. I'd like to talk a little bit more about deferred maintenance. The image here is quite simple. The longer we wait to address facility needs, the more it will cost us. When a building is in excellent or even good condition, it costs state agencies less than $30 per square foot on average to take care of them. But those costs grow exponentially when agencies don't have the resources to make repairs. The average age of our 4,700 state buildings is 41 years, and those buildings are at a tipping point. 51% of those are in average condition or worse. One rating agency has taken note of deteriorating infrastructure and the risk that it prevents to, that it presents to public assets. Last spring, Standard & Poor's wrote, at high enough levels, deferred maintenance is a credit concern, and we think this will be an area of increasing focus in our analysis. Significant underspending and maintenance can reduce asset life and increase capital cost, pressuring government's future financial flexibility. Failure to maintain and invest in infrastructure could also lead to slower economic growth or public safety lapses. If we care about maintaining our AAA bond rating, we need to care about funding for asset preservation. The governor's capital budget prioritizes funding for the asset preservation program as well as standalone projects that address deferred maintenance needs, with recommendations in this area alone totaling $631 million. And over 90% of the governor's recommendation for higher education of $300 million, $272 million of that is for the Higher Education Asset Preservation Program and other renewal projects across college campuses. Let's take a little bit of time to discuss the water infrastructure. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is required to report biennially on the identified wastewater treatment upgrade and construction projects in communities across the state. The high-level takeaway from the agency's 2018 report, over 1,000 projects at a total cost of $5 billion have been identified as needs over the next 20 years. $1.6 billion of that, or 31% of that number, are for wastewater systems, and $3.4 billion, or 69%, of those projects are for sewer systems. The report found that 5% of anticipated projects are related to meeting stricter water quality regulations, but that the overwhelming majority of projects, 95%, are related to replacing aging local water infrastructure. Water infrastructure is not an urban versus rural issue. The need is consistent across the state, with 60% of identified projects located in the metro area and 40% of the projects located in greater Minnesota. In the area of housing that is affordable, the governor proposes that we increase the amount that we spend toward creating housing that's affordable by $150 million. Many of you are aware that the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness in 2014 said that we need to create 5,000 new units of affordable housing between 2014 and 2020. As of February 2018, 2,500 units had been created. But in addition to building new housing that Minnesotans can afford, we must ensure that we're maintaining homes for families, for seniors, and for those transitioning out of homelessness and others who already depend on them. In 2018, Maplewood Gardens, which you see here on this slide, sought funding to be available from the housing infrastructure bonds to preserve 29 units of affordable housing. But due to limited resources, this project was not able to be completed. With the governor's $150 million recommendation for housing affordability, including $120 million for housing infrastructure bonds, this would provide funds for projects like Maplewood Gardens, where more Minnesotans would have access to housing that is safe, comfortable, and affordable. Let's talk a little bit about local transportation. We've heard the governor talk about his transportation and transit package, but one of the things that we want to also highlight is that in the area of local transportation, those communities many times are not able to access the trunk highway funds because the roads we're talking about here are local roads and local bridges, not part of a trunk highway system. This photo that you see here is a result of a recently completed grant through the Local Road Improvement Program. Blaine residents used to refer to this 105th Avenue, which is a 1-mile stretch, It carries over 9,500 vehicles a day. They used to call this Pothole Street. But what you see here is the new 105th Avenue. It's a four-lane urban street with median turn lanes, sidewalk, trail, landscaping, and lighting. This route is an excellent example of the positive impact the local transportation project can have on a community. The 105th Avenue passes in front of a new school in the Spring Lake Park School District, and new businesses have opened along the thoroughfare as well. The governor's capital budget includes $100 million for the local road improvement program. It would fund rural road safety projects, routes of regional significant projects, and the local share of trunk highway improvements. Local roads provide critical connections to the state's interregional corridors and other trunk highways from towns, shipping points, industries, farms, recreational areas, and other markets throughout the state. State assistance is needed to supplement state dedicated financing and preserving and developing a balanced transportation system throughout the state. Preserving the structural integrity of Minnesota's bridges is a top priority for MnDOT, counties, cities, and townships. Bridges are a critical link in the state transportation system and benefits the state's economy by providing connections for people and markets throughout the state. The photo on this slide shows the iconic aerial lift bridge in Duluth. Maintaining the aerial lift bridge is critically important to both Duluth and to our state's economy. Goods worth about $2.3 million pass under the bridge to the Port of Duluth each year. But after nearly 20 years of wear and tear, the lifespan it truss is corroding. To avoid costlier repairs to the steel elements, replacement of the corrosion protection paint coating is necessary in the near term. The governor's capital budget includes $100 million for local bridges. That recommendation would allow for the completion of an $11 million project to repair the aerial lift bridge. The final area that I want to describe today before we talk about the overall budget and the inclusion of the money for the capital projects is the area of safety and reliability of the state's correctional facilities. The photo that I just had up there is from the tunnel at the Minnesota Correctional Facilities in Faribault and is representative of a lot of projects that impact safety and operations. There are a number of tunnels that provide connection of utilities from the power plant to various buildings at the Minnesota Correctional Facility Faribault campus. These tunnels are decades old and now require significant repair to prevent structural failure, as well as update drainage systems, utility racks, and electrical conduit. Currently, the tunnels have temporary shoring in place that essentially provides bracing for the tunnel lid and temporarily mitigates the potential for structural failure. If one of the tunnels is compromised due to structural failure, the utilities within that specific tunnel would be severed and utilities would be lost to the buildings that it serves. The governor's budget, capital budget, includes $38.8 million. I think it says $20 million here, but the $20 million is for just part of the request. It includes a total of $38.8 million for asset preservation and projects in the Department of Corrections to address projects like the tunnel system in Faribault. There are many photos like the one you just saw. Asset preservation projects are needed in all 10 of the state's correctional facilities to fix problems like concrete issues, broken windows, and obsolete, inefficient HVAC systems. While I don't have time to discuss all of them today, there are many important projects that are included in the governor's overall capital budget proposal. We've broken out on this slide the proposals that are based on the committee jurisdiction to provide you some idea of how the projects are spread around the agencies and in the overall Minnesota government. We obviously want the agencies to all the different committees to hear from their agencies. We want this committee to hear from the agencies about the critical needs that they have. But I think one of the things that we want to point out is that while we did not include a lot of specific local projects, many of the governor's proposals are, in fact, have a lot of local impact. There's over $15 million in grants to communities across the state to help keep waste out of landfills. There's critical airport infrastructure in Hibbing that will allow DNR to respond to forest fires in the upcoming seasons. There's restorations of National Guard readiness centers to ensure that facilities are usable for the next generation of military service members, and $5 million in grants for public infrastructure that supports emerging and expanding businesses. As I mentioned earlier, Governor Walz's budget proposal is less than half of what the state could potentially authorize under our debt capacity guidelines. These investments that I've listed are important ones, and they represent the steps that we're taking to fulfill the state's responsibility as a steward of public assets. And with one-third of the proposal going directly toward projects for local governments, it makes Minnesota a partner with cities, counties, and neighborhoods in the effort to improve infrastructure around the state. The governor's biennial budget has planned the debt service associated with this capital budget. Debt service costs are shown here to reflect the 2019 forecast that we released last Thursday. You can see now that we are projecting a $76,073,000 needed increase in the debt service for this bonding proposal in 20 and 21, and a $131 million increase in 22 and 23 for the debt service associated with this bonding proposal. The trunk highway funds are listed separately. I'm happy to take any questions and look forward to working with this committee to come up with the best bonding proposal that we can have. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Tarkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Franz, for being with us this morning. I appreciate your testimony. It's very interesting. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. I do want to highlight one thing that I put a star on that I think is just a great project, and that's the demolition of the Ford building. It's something that should happen. I look out my office window and I see the Ford building every day, and I think, you know, why are we maintaining that? And it's been sitting there, I think, the entire time I've been in the legislature. It's been sitting there looking at me. And so I know it's a very small item, but I just wanted to highlight that because it's an example of assets that we have as a state that we probably should be getting rid of. One of the questions, you bring up a very important point that maintaining the assets we have is getting very costly, and you're right that delaying repairs on some of these facilities can cause further problems down the road. But I think one of the other questions we need to ask is, do we have more on our inventory than we really need? And that's a serious question. It should be asked. This Ford building is just one very small example of an inventory item that we don't need. And the other thing we need to remember is that every time we add another building, a new building, or we add another bridge or another mile of roadway, we're adding to that long-term need for maintenance down the road. And so the costs continue to increase to maintain all of these assets. I'm just going to focus a little bit on transportation, Commissioner. I see that in the governor's proposal you do have additional trunk highway bonds. We are near the suggested limit on trunk highway bonds. I'm not sure how these additional bonds would affect that. Have you taken a look at that?
Commissioner Franz.
Madam Chair, Representative, well, thank you for all those comments. I think going back to the original comment about the Ford building, you know, one of the things that Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota Department of Transportation, as you know, are agencies with a lot of buildings spread around the state. And I think that's a key element is thinking about what is our footprint? What is the footprint, the physical footprint of state government? And we need to be very cautious, about adding buildings, but we need to be cautious about what can we do to make sure that we're maintaining the kind of facilities that we need and make sense. And there are those occasions when the right decision is to take the building down and replace it or at least eliminate it from service. So the Ford building is an interesting one because there are I have to be fair and mention that there's some local interest in maintaining that building. But it does represent one of those issues where you have to come to grips with what's going to be done for that building to maintain some kind of local improvement that makes it worthwhile having versus maintaining it, because it is expensive just to maintain it while it's empty. So I think buildings like the Ford Building and around the state, a number of agencies really are charged, I think, with that decision to come to the legislature and say, you know, we can change our footprint that makes more sense. And I know the DNR constantly is looking at some of their buildings and facilities around the state to decide whether they should be upgraded or in some cases eliminated or modified. So that's a really important thing. And the idea of adding new buildings, you know, I would recommend that one of the things we should think about going forward is how do we on a regular basis maintain an account to provide for asset preservation or deferred maintenance on an ongoing basis. You know, one of the things in the transportation area, they have the corridors of commerce that we hear a lot about, where they rank projects, they decide what are the highest priorities, how much do they cost to fix. But one of the things, and then maintaining some interest in supporting that on a regular basis. But perhaps we should do a similar thing when it comes to our infrastructure, whether it's University of Minnesota, Minnesota State, or the state enterprise, is maintaining a list of those projects that are the most critical that need to be done right away, and then figuring out a way to make sure that every year we make some serious effort toward dealing with that deferred maintenance list. Because I do think the credit rating agencies are right. They're seeing across the country. We all know that across the country we have really an asset preservation backlog or deferred maintenance backlog. Our infrastructure needs work across this country and across this state. And I think that some of the states that really don't take care of that are going to find themselves just like if you have unfunded pension liability. If you don't take care of your assets and keep them up to date, the credit rating agencies are going to realize you've got a problem coming up. You're going to have safety issues. You're going to have concerns about the ability of the economy to thrive when you don't have a system that can get goods and services delivered. So I couldn't agree with you more that the need to think about what assets do we have, how do we maintain them, and when we bring on new assets, are we committed to taking care of those assets going forward? Because it's easy for the first several years when you have a new building, but if we don't plan for that deferred maintenance, it's going to occur over the next 20, 30 years, we're not going to be able to keep up with that. But I think in terms of the Trunk Highway Fund limit, we are working with MnDOT to make sure that we don't exceed that limit. As you rightly point out, over the last several years, we have that limit has been increased on the debt service, so we need to make sure that we're monitoring that, and we're working with the Department of Corrections. The Department of Transportation. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I know that that's a concern that we're following to make sure that we don't overexpose the Trunk Highway Funds to too much debt.
Representative Tarkleson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to make one more general point, and then I'll certainly get out of the way for others to ask questions.
I have a list.
But that would be the point of making sure that if we do invest in something new, that we invest well. There's three examples that are really fairly close to us here, one being the Kellogg Bridge that was built by the state. It's now a city-owned asset, of course, but it was built by the state originally. Is not performing up to what I would think we'd expect it to perform as a structure. The Science Museum here in St. Paul, if you've driven by recently, you see all the scaffolding on the outside doing extensive repair work on a structure that's really not very old. And finally, I'll mention Fort Snelling, the current visitor center. We've all, I think, seen some of the video and other rhetoric regarding how that building just it was a clever design, but it was not necessarily a good design for that particular site. Making sure that we invest our state dollars well is something that behooves us all, and I just bring up that point because we do have a number of examples, Madam Chair, of poorly performing investments as far as infrastructure goes. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Franz, and certainly I don't diminish at all the needs that you are talking about. I mean, we do have an aging infrastructure that we need to address. In the last biennium, we tried to do a lot of that. We have the housing needs. I mean, it's critical to the workforce in greater Minnesota, where it's hard to get people to come and work if they have no place to live. And so these are all problems that we certainly continue need to address. It just comes down to what all can we do. And just a few questions along that line. Once again, and I know you said this before, just so we have it again, what is our debt ceiling limit?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, so as you know, we have three different guidelines, and they're all the first two are percentage of our total income in Minnesota, which is a little over $300 billion. So the first one is, I think it's 3.2%, I think is for the first one, and we're less than 3.2%. So if we were to hit the max, we could bond for something a little over $3 billion we could bond for and still be below that 3.2% of the total personal income in Minnesota. The second one, and that's for those bonds that have been sold. For the bonds that have been authorized but not yet sold, the number is over 6%, and we're well below that guideline as well. And so it's the first guideline that we could sell up to $3 billion this year and still be below the 3.2% guideline. The other guideline talks about how much we're repaying the bonds over time, and we're well within the 70-30% to make sure we're paying off the loans over a particular period of time. So we're well within those guidelines, and those are guidelines that have been recognized by the bonding agency, or the rating agencies, as a way to kind of measure a state's capacity to pay based upon the total personal income in the state.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I'll certainly suggest to my caucus that $3 billion would be a good – no, I won't say that.
Please do.
Now, you mentioned, debt service, how much we pay each year on bonds. What is that amount?
Madam Chair, Representative – the number is a little over $1 billion for a biennium. It's like, I think it's $700 million per year. I have the number right in front of me, but it's about $1 billion, $1.3 or $1.4 billion a biennium is a current debt service.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, just a comment. One of the concerns that folks in my caucus, some of them at least, bring up is, paying more for the bonds each year than we bond for, which puts us in an interesting situation. But, from my standpoint, I again recognize the needs that we have, the fact that things are getting more expensive, and we have to do what we can this year and next to address those needs. One more thing. What is the average that we, in the odd year, what is the average bonding bill?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think in terms of the overall debt, we're somewhere around 3% of our general fund, and if you compare Minnesota to other states, we're right in the middle of the pack in terms of debt capacity, in terms of the amount of debt we have compared to our sort of general fund available dollars. What was the second question you had?
Madam Chair.
Representative,
I've heard it. The average bonding bill the first year of the biennium is in like $200-$250 million, something like that.
Madam Chair, Representative, we forecasted about $260 million, $265 million. So what we've done over the years, as you know, is we've tried to maintain an average. What's the average bonding bill we do in an odd-numbered year like a budget year like this year versus an even-numbered year? And that's what we forecast. So what we've done in the forecast is assumed a $265 million bonding bill this year, and that is paid for, if you will, through the forecasting mechanism. It's not something we have to put into any budget. So the amount that's over 265, which is what we're showing here, the added cost of this debt service is above and beyond the $265 million. But we try to use an average over the last 5 years or so to maintain an idea of what's a fair amount to forecast for in a even-numbered year and an odd-numbered year. So that's the mechanism we use for forecast purposes.
Just a quick thing to finish up.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm assuming then that if we do this 1.3 this year, then we'd be doing probably 260 next year to even it out.
Madam Chair,
I didn't hear that.
That would not be a correct assumption on the part of Governor Walz, but I think that's the $265 million simply reflects an average over time. And I think what Governor Walz would say is that if we have the need and if we have the resources and we can afford to do it and the market conditions are correct, we should take care of those needs that we have at this time.
Okay, so if, Madam Chair, This is it. Just going back to my previous question, if we are now paying around $700 million a year to pay this off, how much has that increased? And you don't have to give me an exact amount, but like 20 years ago, giving any idea about what we were paying?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't. Obviously, the number has increased as the size of the bonding bills have increased, but I don't have a good recollection in my mind of how much that's increased, either as a percentage or as a number, but I'll get that for you, yeah, if that's okay.
We had Governor Carlson with a $1 billion bonding bill roughly 20 years ago, so maybe it's not that much different. It'd be interesting to know, though. Thank you.
Yeah. And, Commissioner, you're 41%, or 41 that you said, the average age of our Minnesota buildings is 41 years. And maybe some history on what the debt service was at the times that we were building up to that 41 years.
Madam Chair, it's a really good point. And one of the things that over the years, as Representative Erdahl mentioned, in 1998, I believe it was the first time we had a bonding bill that was over $1 billion. And by the way, if you simply applied inflation to that number, the average bonding bill today would be $2 billion. But back in those early days when the buildings were first being built, obviously things were cheaper and the amount of money it took to maintain them was, in those dollars, a lot less. But that number has, as we've grown the needs of the state of Minnesota, as the population has grown, as the number of people needing services has grown, and those buildings have been built, we've obviously had to increase the amount of money it takes to both build and maintain those buildings over time.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Franz. I think the governor made a very wise decision to ask you to stay on board, and we're very lucky that you did stay on board, so thank you for that. And every time you talk, I just feel like I learned so much. There's a few of us that are on higher ed and committee, and then through the years, I'm surprised how interested I've gotten in interested in like rooftops and those sort of things and preserving the buildings we have, but that's up on my priority list, and I was glad to see Governor Walz and your team made that a priority for our university system and the Minnesota state system, and I think the state's the better for it if we are able to work those numbers through. They're not very exciting, they're not the fancy ribbon cutting kind of things, but yeah, I'm fixing the buildings and maintaining what we have. And so I'm just happy to see that you've committed to that. And I think it's a real positive thing.
Representative Lilly, maybe we should build in more ribbon cutting opportunities.
Madam Chair, I was going to suggest I'd be happy to go do a ribbon cutting for a new HVAC system. I'd be excited by that.
I would too, I think.
Or even a roof. I was telling the Madam Chair, this morning, I've got a 22-year-old roof at home and a lot of ice dams. I'm going, I think this might be the year that I invest in a new roof. But it is true. I mean, when you talk about if you don't pay now, you will pay more and later. And then if you think about the point that Representative Erdahl made about employment and housing. If you just look at the shrinking job force that we have and the challenges we have to grow Minnesota's economy by the demographics of our aging population and the shrinking of the people available for jobs, we've got to make sure that we provide housing for workers. But we also have to make sure that the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota State, and those colleges and campuses throughout Minnesota provide safe and secure environments, because those those institutions are really the leading, one of the leading edges we have to making sure that we educate and train the workforce, the schools around the E-12 schools. I mean, obviously, everything goes, is what makes Minnesota so great is that we do have a state that works, and we're very proud of what happens here. But, you know, you don't get anything for free, and if you don't pay for this stuff, it's not going to be, we're not going to be able to maintain that edge. We're not going to be able to attract people. We need to make sure everyone succeeds in this state who's a resident now, but we also need to bring more people to the state of Minnesota. And the governor really believes that the, by increasing educational opportunities through not just money to the education facility, to their budgets, but also to fixing their buildings and institutions. It's really the smart way to grow. And it's also countercyclical. If, in fact, you know, we talked about a little bit of a economic, the growth slowing in last Thursday, but if there is any kind of slowing coming up, one of the best ways to counter that is through a bonding bill that over time invests in communities and brings on more jobs. So I'm sorry I got long-winded, but thank you, Representative.
Are you finished? Okay, Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Franz, thanks for coming in this morning. The trigger came from Representative Torkelson talking about the maintenance and that longstanding practice that we have of the ribbon cuttings and the glamour of the new and shiny toys that are out there that this committee tends to focus on. And I guess I want to dig in just a little bit more with the executive branch and how they prioritize some of that maintenance. Do they have a standing plan? Do they have ongoing measures to track and budget and anticipate what we're going to be looking for in the next 5, 10, 20 years when it comes to those types of asset preservations? And or, in the absence of that, do they need legislative direction to make sure that we're fulfilling those needs? Because, again, a lot of these investments are they're expensive to put up, they're expensive to build, they're expensive to maintain, but we have many of them out there right now. We've got empty space sitting in this building, frankly, that I, as a realtor, find really frustrating, because in the private sector, we wouldn't stand for that. That'd be inefficiency, and we'd want to fill those offices. We'd want to make sure that the work that can be being done in those spaces can be being done rather than building new and shiny all the time.
Madam Chair,
really good
point. And one of the things that the University of Minnesota and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities and the state of Minnesota all maintain, what we call, they call them different things, but they're essentially asset preservation inventories. And they inventory every single asset that they have in terms of buildings or structures. And they categorize them into whether they're in a crisis mode, really need immediate attention, whether they're in poor condition, whether they're in fair condition, good condition, or excellent condition. So the goal is to try to monitor all the assets in the inventory of the state of Minnesota, University of Minnesota, and Minnesota State. So, and that is the basis of the request coming from the two institutions and from the state of Minnesota. What are those areas where we've got buildings that are in poor or crisis condition that we simply have to take care of right away? But that's how we were getting to that, to the number a little bit earlier. We were talking about how old the projects are, or how old the buildings are, and what kind of needs they have. So we try to maintain a running inventory so we know where every building, where every asset is in terms of its term of service, whether it has any critical repairs that need to be made. So that is the basis for which we make these recommendations to the governor about what should be included in the bonding bill. And I think one of the things we found from both University of Minnesota and Minnesota State, and now the state of Minnesota's own system for tracking these at deferred maintenance costs, is that's where we come up with this number that over the next number of years we have billions of dollars in that we know we're going to need to spend, because as these buildings age, we know that they're going to come down into a new category. And so we both need to maintain them in terms of just normal maintenance, you know, painting and upkeep while they're in good condition and new, but we also know that the paint will only last so long, and eventually we're going to need to do something more drastic. So it's that system that we use to try to really make sure we have a sense of what is the inventory, how big is the inventory, and what condition is it overall. And we can share that information with the committee. That would be helpful.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Representative Pearson.
Yeah, I appreciate that answer. That helps out a lot. The context is the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota State System, and the state of Minnesota. And so I'm fairly familiar with the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State System and their deeper funding and the specific priorities. So you're saying we do a similar thing within the state of Minnesota across. So how is that prioritized across the categoricals then, across all of the different agencies? How do we rank and prioritize those things, and how does that impact the requests that we see here?
Madam Chair, Representative Boyd, one of the ways we do that is, for example, and I know Commissioner Schnell is here available to talk about it, one of the when you get buildings or facilities that are in poor or crisis condition, you have to also assess, are they posing a safety hazard or to the public that's using that facility? Or in the case of corrections, we have some, a lot of the corrections buildings are, really, really old and provide really, in addition to providing maintenance challenges, they also provide safety challenges in just the way they're designed. So part of what we try to do is, you don't just look at the number that are in poor or crisis condition or fair condition. You look at, are they a threat to the safety and security of the people who are using them or who are working them? So those are the kinds of concerns that will rise a project up, and that's one of the reasons why Commissioner Schnell's projects were forefront in the governor's recommendations, because we felt that they needed from a asset management point of view, they needed to be fixed, but from a safety issue, we needed to fix those too. So we try to use not just the numbers, but also a quality analysis about how critical is that need to get fixed.
Representative Pearson. And not even a question, just a follow-up statement, because I find that to be true, from what I review and what we have studied in this committee over the last few years, and I think longer ago than that, having talked to staff extensively about this issue as well, we really just tend to prioritize the shiny and new, specifically in this room. And I really, I kind of just want to say shame on us. I really do believe that we need to start focusing more on this. There was, in your comments, you talked about how the state of Minnesota has grown, and so the needs have grown. Well, again, I'd push back on that, and I'd resist that a little bit simply by saying the economies of scale, number one, should create some efficiencies. The way the workforce works in today's environment, we should be revolutionizing how state office buildings are constructed. There should be workspaces that can be fluid. If someone's sitting in an office, I feel like they're not doing their job. They need to be out serving the people in the state of Minnesota. And that may mean they need to be out in the community. They need to be out reaching out to people at the hospitals, at the, fill in the blank. Whatever their job is probably not actually getting done in an office. We have to rethink that, and we need to be using technologies and creating the efficiencies that exist, again, in the private sector. I'm a real estate agent. We recently remodeled our office. We're using a third of the space that we used to use because that's what our job is to be out working, not sitting in an office space. And again, I that's a very broad statement, and I know not everyone's job can be done on the road, and not everyone's job is specifically inclined for that type of interaction. But I do think we want to challenge the status quo of how we've been going about things and what we've been building. And more than anything else, I think we have to focus on the assets that we have. The fact that we talk about structures being in a crisis situation, that's the problem here. I mean, again, we're building all this new and shiny, and I'm as guilty as the next person because, I've certainly authored my share of bonding requests as well. But shame on us if those are the ones we're prioritizing before we're doing the things that we need to take care of what we have and not be talking about things in a crisis So that's all I wanted to share, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pearson, and you've given us a background to think about as this committee decides on our priorities for the first time for this biennium as we proceed along in the next several weeks. And you've given us points to consider at that time, and we will keep them in mind. Quickly, Representative Salk, we've reached.
I'll just say that I would like to continue a discussion sometime about the topics that Representative Torkelson and Peterson have just talked about, because I have very strong feelings that are very much in line with that. I think that we build the fire here, mm-hmm. and I think that as we're sitting here taking pot shots at it, we have to remember every one of us comes here with our chest out, ready to go at it, because our community has sent us up to bring home a new building, or to bring home a new road, or to bring home a new... That, I think, it's the mindset that we're struggling with, and I agree with Representative Pearson.
And we will continue this conversation at a later time. Thank you so much, Commissioner. Your insights are very important to this committee. We liked your enthusiasm for going forward, and we look forward to continue to work with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Commissioner Schnell is here to talk today. And please remember, Commissioner is new, and Commissioner is bringing forth a proposal for his buildings in his purview. And many of his buildings had a different use before the Department of Corrections received them. And as a former chair of corrections in general and judiciary and public safety, I have great memories of trying to convince that the buildings had usefulness, but they weren't built. Several of them weren't built as a prison, but they've been serving our state very well. And it was one way, by using these buildings for prison purposes, it was a way to keep the state in the regions that they had state investment in the first place. And so we have buildings scattered across the state. And welcome to this committee for the first time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. It's a pleasure to be here. Paul Schnell, the new Commissioner of Corrections for the state, and really proud to represent the organization. The Minnesota Department of Corrections has over 300 buildings that we maintain and operate throughout the system. Of that, 150 of those buildings have elements that have some ratings that fall in the poor area. And 19 of them are in crisis, have been designated as crisis condition. And that occurs annually when inspectors go in and do a facility condition audit. And that's where those determinations come from. As Commissioner Franz mentioned, we have over $600 million in deferred maintenance needs across the Department of Corrections. And I think it's important to note that, you know, we house over 10,000 people each day, roughly 10,000 people each day. The newest facility in our system is in Rough City, and that's 22 years old. And even now, we are just beginning to see the asset preservation needs developing in that facility. When we look at the entire system, three of our facilities, Stillwater, St. Cloud, and Red Wing, those buildings are all over 100 years old, and the needs in those facilities are significant. In addition to the housing of these people, in some of these prisons we have as many as 400 people working in them at any given time. So the needs we know are profound, and as Commissioner Franz mentioned, $20 million of the governor's plan is to do correctional asset preservation. And he showed the picture of the tunnel at Faribault. We recently had a chunk of facade fall off one of the buildings in Faribault, which as the chair pointed out, was previously a state hospital facility. Just these buildings are in really fundamental need of updating. Lionel Lakes prison had the water system go down recently, and we fortunately were able to connect with city water because the well system there was not operating as it should. Stillwater has some really significant needs for updating and upgrading of bathroom and plumbing throughout. Some of that in some areas of the facility are even original, which is incredible to think about. As we look at the other projects throughout the system, we really are talking about things like Lionel Lakes. There's a building that is presently unable to be used because of kind of core electronics. The entire kind of heating HVAC system was needed to be repaired. And so that building is not currently in use. But as we think about the system and what the needs are across the Department of Corrections, we know that services for mentally ill prisoners is a profound and significant need. We need to provide treatment programming for these inmates, and ultimately we believe that this building is one of the ways that we can address the growing need for mental health services that we're seeing within the system. St. Cloud's interior perimeter fence, you know, that's a beautiful granite wall that surrounds that facility. If we were to do repairs on that granite wall itself, the cost would be astronomical, just astronomical. So really investing in the interior perimeter fence is one of the things that is a critical security necessity. Togo's, our challenge incarceration program at far northern Minnesota, we need to replace. There's a fundamental need there to replace the sewer system. If we don't do that, we are going to ultimately end up having environmental issues because that sewer system is today the original, which I will add was hand dug by inmates many, many, many years ago. And St. Cloud and Stillwater, both of them require, for code purposes, a critical life safety need of fire suppression systems to be built in them. And I think these investments are huge, and they have big implications even in terms of the management of our population. So as we think about this, it does become a critical necessity for us to have these upgrades, but we also need to really work on in terms of how we plan them. Because obviously we have to move inmates for periods of time while this work is being done. And then finally, there is in Red Wing we have serious needs around master control, the electronics, the technology that operates much of that facility, our camera systems, and profound needs around ADA compliance issues. And this is coming up throughout the system because of the age of our facilities. ADA compliance is a significant issue. In fact, the Department of Justice has been working with DOC staff around some of the issues of ADA compliance throughout the system. And we have and are developing a plan. And right now, Red Wing is one of the areas that we need to make an investment, because right now, in order to have family members visit somebody who's incarcerated at Red Wing, we have to bring them in through a secure area, because that's the only access for a wheelchair-dependent person. So these needs are profound. They're significant. They speak directly to the safety and security of both our staff, as well as the nearly 10,000 people that are serving sentences in our facilities. We believe that the governor's plan is a good one. It is a start. As I said, the needs are profound. They're great. But we think that these do represent the most critical needs we have today. So funding this, we believe, is important to the safety and security of our prisons. I would stand for any questions you have, but I appreciate the opportunity and the attention being given to the needs across Minnesota around capital bonding issues.
Thank you. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming before us. If I remember correctly, in your statement, you said there are about 19 buildings that are in crisis condition. Can you tell us, are these housing people who are incarcerated right now, or if not, what are their current functions?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, yes, these do house. There are elements of the facilities that have critical needs. So we may have, for instance, the well system at Lionel Lakes is something. Now, we do have a redundancy or a backup plan, but that is not a good long-term option because even that required a variety of jury-rigging kind of efforts to make that work. So these critical needs are throughout and do include places where we house inmates today.
Representative Wogama.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I want to thank you and the Governor for realizing how needed these investments in our correctional facilities are. I speak as the representative from St. Cloud, where we have a correctional facility that is very aging infrastructure. The maintenance of this building is vital to the safety and security of our community in St. Cloud. I can literally see the correctional facility from my front porch, and so I want to thank you for what you're doing to make it more safe, you know, with the fire suppression and also with the much-needed fencing for the wall. It directly impacts the safety and security of my family and my neighbors. My question for you, Mr. Commissioner, is we've seen the cost of these projects, but from your perspective, what would the cost be of not making these investments, of not moving forward with your and the governor's recommendations? What would the cost be for the safety and security of Minnesotans if we don't move forward on these projects?
Commissioner Schnell.
Madam Chair, Representative, the costs, I can't begin to even really begin to speak to some of the costs. The reality is there's going to come a point where we are going to have to move people out of these some of these facilities, and that puts significant pressure on other areas of the system. We today, for instance, in St. Cloud and in Stillwater, those facilities were not built as double bunking facilities, and yet we double bunk in a number of these facilities. To not do something that investment at Togo ultimately could result in bringing another up to 100 and 2,530 inmates into other facilities, which would put pressure on the system. And this becomes really an important reality that we invest in these things that are going to keep these facilities safe and operational today. These projects, the items listed here, this $38.8 million in bonding money, will help us to ensure that we can keep these facilities operational and safe.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for being here, Commissioner. And while Commissioner Schnell may be new on this job, he does have a wealth of experience, including Chief of Police in Hastings, which is in my district. So thank you for being here today, Commissioner. My question is, there's so many questions that we could ask Department of Corrections that are outside the purview of this committee, so I'll try to keep them away from issues like segregation and you mentioned double bunking. But what is the overall Department of Corrections budget?
Commissioner Schnell.
Madam Chair, our budget is just over about $600 million annually.
Okay. And with the other issues that you're facing, how the bonding requests that we have, I know one of the issues is even being able to hire enough of corrections officers. So how will the bonding help? Will it help in hiring, in retaining staff, in alleviating some of the double bunking that you're talking about and some of the other safety issues that our corrections officers are facing?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, it will have an impact. We know that everything is connected. the perceptions of safety, the security system investments that we can make. Some of the corrections, the general asset preservation things are including all of our master some of our master control electronics, the technology that we use to operate, that has a direct impact on the safety and security of our staff as well as the inmates that we house. And ultimately, in order to recruit and retain people, we need to make these types of investments, the hard infrastructure investments as well, in order to both attract and retain staff to work in our facilities.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Mr. Lacasmoel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Kent Lacasmoel, the Director of Capital Investment for DNR. And thank you for the time to provide some more detail on DNR's portion of this request. And this request continues the focus on taking care of what we have, and that has been a growing request both in the legislature and certainly with Commissioner Landwehr and now Commissioner Stroman. Asset preservation is our number one priority. And we've seen a difference. The legislature in the past few years has committed more dollars to asset preservation. And I should point out that DNR's has a separate definition. Ours is natural resources asset preservation. That is more than just buildings. It's for all types of our facilities. It's trails and roads and bridges and everything that's under our purview. DNR has over $3 billion of assets, not including land. And we have facilities in every county in the state. So the work that we end up doing is spread around the states. Now, most of the requests that you see in the governor's budget were things that were in last year's budget. Some of them were partially funded, and this completes some of those projects. Talking about buildings to begin with, we do have about half of the state's buildings. We have a little over 2,800 buildings. One in three of those buildings is over 50 years old. We've got some buildings that are over 100 years old. Many were built by the CCC, and you'll find those in the state parks around the state. One in four of the buildings are in either unacceptable or poor conditions. We have 215 buildings that are in unacceptable conditions. And obviously our focus on buildings is those that we are housing people in or that have a significant public use. So we have $150 million of deferred maintenance in buildings. If you look at all of our assets, the deferred maintenance is about $445 million. We have just completed a report that identifies the 10-year needs for DNR dealing with our assets, and we can make that available to the committee. And that includes, I mean, we are looking at water and wastewater. We've had significant problems in some areas. Madam Chair, I'm sure you're aware that a Jay Cook water line broke and that park was without potable water for a number of months, and that was an emergency repair. We spent $150,000 on that fix. Couple of the other things that are in this request is the fire operations center that Commissioner Franz mentioned to repair, replace the ramp, the parking area for the planes at Hibbing for the fire our fire response. And the Hibbing Airport is one of three that are the primary air tanker bases. And that ramp is getting well past its life cycle. It's got cracks in it. It's the planes have to be careful as they come across that that ramp now. We also have that dam safety request in the governor's budget for $2 million. We have 311 dams that are state-owned. There's about another 300 that are publicly owned. The highest priority on our list now, and by June we provide a list to the legislature of our dam safety priorities. The top priority is the Norway Lake Dam, which is located in Pine River. And that's a high-hazard dam that needs reconstruction. One of the things last year in our request was to improve accessibility for state parks and recreation areas. And we had a request for $20 million, and there was $500,000 that was funded last year that would provide for the planning and the design. And the idea behind that was to go to a state park and make it fully accessible. You know, as we build new buildings, they're made accessible. They meet all of the code requirements. But instead of doing accessibility and ADA projects on a one-off basis, the proposal was to go to a park, and William O'Brien is our top priority park, and to go there and make all of the facilities fully accessible. It's the buildings, the vault toilets, have the slopes at the all of the trails, and have everything that is that would be fully accessible. So we're doing the design now. We don't know exactly what the cost of completing just William O'Brien entirely is yet. Early estimates were it's probably $5 million a park. So William O'Brien was the first park, and Fort Snelling was the second park on that list. The other main category that is in this budget was the betterment and acquisition of public lands. And our focus on that has been for acquisitions, it's to buy in holdings. It's to buy the parcels that can improve access. Forestry has one parcel. If they acquired this small parcel, it would provide access to another 1,600 acres of public land that's currently landlocked. So we were being very strategic in how we would approach that. Within parks, there's 41,000 plus acres of privately owned land that's within the statutory boundaries of the state parks. It's those kinds of parcels that we would be looking at acquiring. But the more important piece of that is the betterment of lands, which would include things like reforestation, dealing with severances on state trails, and safety on state trails, to put in a bridge or a tunnel underneath a road so you can avoid the at-grade crossings on state trails. On scientific natural areas, native prairie bank areas, provide for the parking and deal with the fencing and some of those improvements that aren't able to be done with the acquisition dollars. There's also prairie restoration, addressing public access needs. Also within that is shade tree grants, where we've had invasives affect the urban forests. So we've had programs in the past that provided grants to local governments. So real quickly, Madam Chair, that's a real quick overview of our programs, and I could stand for questions.
It is, and I'm sorry we're behind, but Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be quick. Mr. Lacosmo, I see the $20 million for acquisition and betterment of public lands on the list here. The question I have is how much are we also spending on land acquisition with the LCCMR and the Lessard-SAMS funds? Is there money also requested there?
Madam Chair, Representative Nornes, there are dollars requested within those programs. I don't have those exact numbers, but certainly there's been acquisition through those programs of, for parks and trails. And we can provide that to the committee, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sansett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am looking at improving accessibility to state park and rec areas. You have $19.5 million, it looks like, set aside, and you gave us your number one and number two priorities. If those were taken care of, how much is left over for other parks?
Director?
Madam Chair and Representative, until we get into it and actually do the designs and the build, it's a little hard to say. I mean, we had roughly estimated it would be $5 million a park, so if those two take 10, there's $9.5 million left. And what we would like to do and what we're trying to do now with the dollars provided is to do some design and be more ready to construct. And that's what you see with the universities and the state colleges, where we've had a lack of funding in this area, so we've been dealing with emergencies on whether it's asset preservation or even this accessibility. So we need to do the design first and then get into the construction.
Madam Chair.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you. Last question. Is there a priority list on the parks in general?
Madam Chair and Representative, you mean for the accessibility projects?
Yes.
Yes, and I can provide that. I don't have it in these papers.
Thank you. We would really appreciate the things that you've offered to provide with us with, and we will probably have questions at a later time, more questions at a later time
certainly,
for you.
Madam Chair, I'm available anytime.
Very good. Thank you so much. Christine Elwood, state aid for local transportation, MnDOT. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
5 minutes short of time already.
I will be very brief.
Thank you.
So you already introduced me, and yes, I work for the Office of State Aid for Local Transportation. Our office supports statewide transportation system, and we work with the local government, so the counties, cities, and townships, to ensure that we have a statewide transportation system that's safe, effective, and it's a coordinated highway network. Our office also distributes funds for the highway maintenance and construction to cities, counties, and townships. So two of the programs our office administers are the Local Road Improvement Program and the Local Bridge Replacement Program. And the local agencies do a really good job of delivering projects, and they've got an extensive list. So there are two handouts that you're going to be provided. So I'm going to talk about the Local Road Improvement Program first, but just from the big picture, I want you to know that 92% of the state's roadway miles are on the local system, and 80% of the bridges are on the local system. There are some significant needs, and those are demonstrated on both of the handouts that you're being provided. So in 2017, we had 217 projects that were requested for the Local Road Improvement Program, and that was for $584 million was the request. We were able to have a competitive solicitation. 36 statewide projects were funded with $25 million. And then in 2018, those same 217 projects, we were able to take 56 more projects and fund them with $35 million that was provided in 2018. And then we recently closed a solicitation for 2019. We don't have money, but we wanted to understand the needs that are still there for this program. And we received 119 applications for a request of $98 million. And we think that's a little low just because there's no funding there yet. And so if there's funding, we think that will increase. Some projects to quick highlight from that program are the City of Blaine. They reconstructed 105th Avenue from Trunk Highway 65 to Radisson Road. That serves the National Sports Center, the Schwann Super Rink, and the Blaine Soccer Complex. In 2018, in Renville County, there was a project on County State Aid Highway 4. And that was reconstruction of 5 miles of roadway, upgraded, and accommodated trucks hauling 10-ton loads. Another project in Proctor, which was 6th Street and Almack Drive project, it was reconstructed to improve the streets, drainage, and pedestrian ramps. Another project in 2018 was the Carrollton Township, and this was selected because of the two township roads, Goodview and Heron in Fillmore County. The road was really unsafe and had a substandard gravel roadway, and it served the businesses and Eagle Bluff Environmental Center, which is one of the county's largest employers, and also several schools go there on field trips, and so we wanted to make sure that was accommodated, and it hosts over, the Eagle Bluff hosts over 17,000 people annually. A couple more projects that will be built in 2019 are in Hutchinson, South Grad Road. It'll be reconditioned with a mill and overlay of the pavement, intersection improvements, and trail. Redwood Falls has a project to reconstruct Courthouse Square. And the small city of Vesta has a project with grading and resurfacing. So this program overall provides $4 of improvements for every $1 of bond investment that's provided. Pretty good return. The second program I want to touch base on is the Local Bridge Replacement Program, and this is only for replacing existing bridges. Currently, there are 15,000 bridges on the local roadway system, and 920 of these are deficient or obsolete. So there are two bridge lists that you might see through this legislative session. One is the needs for the next 5 years, and one is a waiting list. The one that you have in front of you is the waiting list. Those are projects that are shovel-ready, They have plans are done or in the works. Those are ready to go. And so on that list, there's 80 bridges that can go right away. But the five-year needs is 767 bridges. So this is requested for replacement in 2019 and 2020. And these have all been adopted by either the county or city resolutions, and so they are aware of these bridges and they support them. The average cost of these bridges is about $427,000, and the replacement cost of these 767 bridges is over $417 million. So I just wanted to make sure you understand. So there's a waiting list and then there's a needs list, and we encourage the local agencies not to do plans and specs until there's money available. Otherwise, they have to redo those plans and specs and the environmental work. So that's why there's only 80 on the waiting list that are ready, shovel ready. But I wanted to make sure you understood the big picture needs.
Can you explain a little bit more in detail this jump from the five-year, the big number in the five-year coming?
So there's a total need of 767 bridges that need replacement.
Right.
But there's 80 projects, 80 bridges that are ready to go, where there's plans that are developed and the agencies can turn them around right away. They're shovel ready. So that 80 is part of that 767.
Okay, but this 767 keeps growing?
It doesn't keep growing. That's what it is today. That's what it is today.
All right.
Sorry, and then answering the question.
Okay, so what if we pay for these 80?
Madam Chair.
Then do we have 80 less than 750?
Exactly.
Okay, and that won't change at all until the next go-around of bonding.
Madam Chair, yes. As they inspect the bridges and look at them and you have more that get added to that deficient list over time, yes, that number will go back up or continue to fluctuate.
Okay. Are these 80 the highest priority of the 750?
Madam Chair, yes, they are the top priority bridges.
So the 750th bridge is least likely to have trouble or break down.
Madam Chair, yes. We put the top priority bridges are the ones that are on that waiting list, ready to go.
Thank you very much. MPCA. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. My name is Greta Gauthier. I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I apologize, Kurt Kadelka could not join us today. I'm going to quickly go over our projects in this bill, Madam Chair. As you know, one of our key functions is the management of solid waste or garbage. And these bills are all, or the proposals today are all related to our capital assistance program through which we provide grants to local governments to help develop and implement integrated solid waste management, basically recycling and other recycling-related infrastructure. So today we have $15.3 million worth of projects. There are four projects, and I'll go through them quickly. The first one that is statewide, Madam Chair, is for composting infrastructure across the state. Right now, of all the trash that Minnesotans throw away, 30% of it is organic waste, so food waste, grass clippings, and compostable materials that touch food waste and therefore can have to go in with organics. So, Madam Chair, if we could divert that 30% of organic waste from the waste stream, that would reduce our demand for future landfills and would save the state money in the long run. As we know, closed landfills can be very expensive. So statewide, these would be grants to public facilities for building or expanding compost facilities or adding transfer stations for compost. The second one is a grant in Clay County in Moorhead to construct a new transfer station, and this would divert more than 9,400 tons of material per year from the Clay County landfill. This transfer station will allow them to handle more recyclables and problem materials like household hazardous waste, electronic waste, and other bulky waste. Then that will be able to do that where they cannot do that today. The third is in Brooklyn Park, Madam Chair, in Hennepin County. This is another expansion of a transfer station, and that would give them the capacity to handle an increased volume of organic materials they are currently receiving. It'll help us increase the organics diverted to 25,000 tons per year over and above what they are currently doing today. Madam Chair, the fourth project is in Anoka County in Coon Rapids, and this is at the Coon Rapids Recycling Center. And this will this center focuses on hard-to-manage projects like polystyrene, appliances, carpet, mattresses, and more, and they have reached their maximum capacity. And so this grant will allow them to add capacity to take more material from across the Anoka County. And so, Madam Chair, I would be remiss if I did not also mention that in the governor's budget and in the Clean Water Legacy Fund are dollars that support a previous bonding appropriation from 2017 that was for $25.4 million for the St. Louis River Area of Concern and the cleanup. So we are proposing to continue the positions and the remediation money that was part of the deal that by which we are leveraging $47.2 million from the federal government. So I would be remiss if I did not mention that we are continuing that very important cleanup project in the St. Louis River. With that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Representative Salt.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. This may be just a question that opens a door and we have to close it later. I'm quite aware of, I happen to live in Olmsted County, and we've got a situation where we've got a burner that basically all our garbage goes into the burner, is turned into either steam for other uses in the community and electricity. Through that project, we have actually closed one of our landfills and reversed it. We are now at the end of recycling that whole landfill back into the burner and making that garbage disappear. The conflict that's developing is the ratings toward being what our energy standards are to be like. I don't even know what the designations are that we want. We're trying to be 100% by, and then whatever that designation is. Things like burners are going to fall off the table. So a burner, although it's doing, I think, an incredible good for society in that we are not burying all our garbage in our land for the water to get polluted, that burning activity is going to fall off of recognition as to energy in our state. And I'm concerned about the kind of conflict that these two dialogues are going to create quite soon. So I don't know if you have any awareness or comments or thoughts. I would give you the open door to do that, but I understand that I've opened a gigantic, big discussion.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Salk. Yes, we are very aware of that issue. The state of Minnesota has statute that sets a hierarchy for solid waste management. Obviously, the most preferred option is to reduce our solid waste, not create it in the first place, then to recycle, and so forth. And at the very bottom of the list is landfilling. We consider, under that state law, and we agree with it, that incineration to produce energy or waste to energy facilities are a higher priority than landfilling. And so under current state law, we support the current infrastructure the state of Minnesota has to continue. Minnesota has more waste to energy infrastructure than some other states, but we feel that the extraction of energy out of that waste is what puts it higher in our priority list in statute over landfills. I hope that clears it up, Madam Chair, but you are right. This is the intersection of energy policy and solid waste policy, and that's going to be something that the legislature is going to have to detangle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Carlson. Sorry, but the questions have reduced your time down to 2 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Charles Carlson, Director of BRT Projects. I have a two-minute statement.
Good morning.
I am here to speak on behalf of the Metropolitan Council for the D-Line, the Metro D-Line Bus Rapid Transit Project. Governor Walz's capital project or capital budget directs $20 million toward the expansion of the D-Line, which will run along Chicago, Emerson, Fremont Avenues in Brooklyn Center, Minneapolis, Richfield, and Bloomington. Bus transitways like the D-Line are efficient, reliable, and user-friendly for passengers. This investment will create opportunities for community prosperity by improving access to jobs and other needs. This corridor is already MetroTransit's single highest bus route, carrying over 5 million passengers per year. Arterial BRT is a proven solution to the challenges we face on local bus corridors. The Metro A-Line project, which received state funding, grew ridership by over 30% in the Snelling Avenue corridor by responding to two key challenges faced in local bus routes. First, slow and unreliable bus speeds. Delays from red lights and slow boarding mean that buses are stopped up to half the time. The A-Line has achieved, as the D-Line will offer, significantly reduced delays in these corridors by providing off-vehicle fare collection, optimized station spacing, and traffic signal prioritization. Second, we respond to inadequate passenger facilities and information. Unlike regular bus stops, BRT stations offer clear, defined waiting areas and real-time arrival information that makes transit service more attractive. The proposed $20 million investment would match $55 million that we've already secured for the D-Line. It would complete the project's funding and would be used for design and engineering, environmental work, acquisition of right-of-way engineering, and construction. So this capital investment is one component of the governor's transit funding proposal, which could further upgrade the D-Line beyond this to include electric buses. With that, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to share the project. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to move the rules for our February 28th meeting. Or the minutes. I'm sorry, the rules.
Yes.
The new rules. The minutes.
All in favor of the approval of the minutes of the 28th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the minutes are adopted.
I have to go to rules.
Representative, or Mr. Kerr, Department of Military Affairs, you have 3 minutes.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. And I'm going to make an investment myself here. I know I've only got 3 minutes, Madam Chair, but I'm still going to do this because the Adjutant General told me I should. Thank you very much. This committee has been very supportive to our agency. The entire legislature has been, not only in capital investment, but in our base budget. And I want you to know that when we go to meet with our contemporaries from the other 53 states and territories, they're envious of the support that we get from our legislature and from the people of Minnesota, and we appreciate that. I'm here today to talk about two projects that were submitted in last year's capital investment bill. You funded the first four. These are the two that remain. And I'm going to spend a little time, though they're both important. One is in Rosemont. The other is in Fergus Falls, upgrades to the armories. I'm going to spend my time talking about the Rosemont facility because the timing is important to us here, Madam Chair. You may or may not know that we're currently constructing a $39 million facility, totally federally funded, in Arden Hills that we're going to move the 34th Division headquarters into. That facility will be available in 2020 to move them there. We will then move another unit in behind them, but it is our intention to do this, do renovation to the Rosemont Armory in 2020, and that means the timing kind of is critical for us. What we don't want to do is move a unit in there and then have to move them out again later to do the renovation. So that's why this is our number one priority. It's a fairly large project, but that's why it's there, and it's kind of critical for us. The Fergus Falls project needs to be done as well. You'll notice that there's a handout that came out to the members. It's got pictures of armories on it. And that gives the details of the projects. And I think with that, Madam Chair, I will stand for any questions and yield back any time.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Kerr, how many armories do we have in the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl.
The Honorable is fine.
we have 61 armories, and that number is a little bit wishy-washy because we actually, it depends on whether you count the ones that were in construction and haven't completed yet, but we're going to go with 61. That's our number. We're sticking to it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kerr. I'm going to give you, in 30 years, how many will we have?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, our current plan is to be down to 54 armories in 30 years. We do have a plan to divest of certain facilities. It's not strictly based on the age of the facility or the condition of the facility, though that factors in. It also has to do with the demographic projections and our activities in the state. For example, it's important that we be where there are people who can be soldiers, but it's also important for us to be where we may need to perform state active duty missions. For example, we housed 187 travelers in the Owatonna Armory last week when they were stranded due to the weather, and it's important that we maintain that footprint out in the communities so that we can support the people of Minnesota. And it's not totally an economic decision about where we're going to divest, but there are demographics involved. There's past military unit history and past state active duty performance history that bears into the equation.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr, and members, thank you. We will be meeting next on Thursday, March 7th. This meeting is adjourned.